Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino. With cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
The Gone Cold podcast may contain violent or graphic subject matter. Listener discretion is advised.
On Wednesday, October 30th, 1996, representatives from about 20 North Texas law enforcement agencies and the Association of Radio Managers held a news conference at Dallas City Hall to unveil a new joint effort. With the abduction of Amber Hagerman, we had enough of a description that it could have been helpful, Arlington Police Chief David Kunkel said, referring to the vehicle whose driver snatched the 9-year-old girl more than 10 months earlier in his city. Amber was kidnapped in Arlington in January of 1996 and later found murdered.
If we had this type of program in place, the lawman continued, we could have gotten the word out.
Perhaps, Chief Kunkel suggested, Amber's life would have been saved. Garland police, who were also in attendance, might have said the same thing about the kidnapping and killing of 8-year-old Kim Nguyen 3 years earlier, had they spoken in front of the television and newspaper microphones clustered atop the podium. Kim's was another case that included a relatively specific vehicle description. This new emergency broadcast plan, named for Amber Hagerman, which was to go into effect immediately, called for North Texas police agencies to alert local radio stations via fax when the disappearance of a child is confirmed as an abduction, after which the station will promptly interrupt programming to provide a description of the missing child and the vehicle in which they were abducted. The confirmed part was vital, at least in concept, to keep false alarms to a minimum. Although president of the Association of Radio Managers, Skip Schmidt, commented that the possibility of false alarms that existed was overshadowed by the importance and benefits of the new plan. If it saved just one life, Schmidt said, it was worth the effort. He also estimated that around 98% of area adults would likely be reached by the new emergency program, which today has inarguably proven to be one of the most important and successful projects in the history of American law enforcement. At this point, however, the Amber Plan was less a requirement or law and more of an agreement between the 29 Dallas-Fort Worth area radio stations involved in the Association of Radio Managers and a couple dozen local police jurisdictions. But it was a huge step, nonetheless. Dallas Police Chief Ben Click, in fact, was adamant on that point when he spoke of the crucial role time plays in an abduction case.
If we don't recover the child in those first few hours, Chief Click said, the chances of finding the child unharmed or alive greatly diminish as time goes on.
Earlier that month, President Bill Clinton had signed into law the Amber Hagerman Child Protection Act. Proposed in the United States Congress by Representative Martin Frost of North Texas, the act resembled a national version of the previous year's Ashley's Laws, which was named after abducted and murdered 7-year-old Ashley Estelle. In September of 1995, Ashley's laws set minimum prison sentences for sexual predators in Texas, required sex offenders to publicly register as such in the state, and required them to inform proper authorities should they relocate. With the Amber Hagerman Child Protection Act, a year later, the creation of a national sex offender registry was underway. Child rapists, under specific circumstances, were required to serve life sentences after their second offense. And judges who impose sentences that do not meet those guidelines, the act said, are to be reported to the United States Congress. The act also paved the way for the Amber Plan. But it was the culmination of civilian ideas, not authorities and radio bigwigs, that had set the entire thing in motion. In early 1996, not long after Amber Hagerman was abducted and murdered, her mother, Donna Whitson, father, Richard Hagerman, and a close friend, Bruce Siebert, began a support team. They called it PASO, which stood for People Against Sexual Offenders. Immediately upon coming together, PASO began collecting signatures of citizens to bring to the Texas legislative branch in hopes the pressure would lead to harsher punishment for sex offenders as well as laws that might make it more difficult for them to reoffend. By the summer of 96, the group purposefully caught the attention of their United States Representative in Congress, Martin Frost, who began drafting the Amber Hagerman Child Protection Act alongside them. It would be a disservice to leave out the important contribution of the individual who came up with the idea that would become the Amber Plan in the first place. A concerned mother from Dallas named Diane Simone called a local radio station the day Amber Hagerman's body was found, according to NBC News, and suggested that local broadcasters team up with local police to disseminate information immediately upon a child abduction. That simple yet brilliant idea and the group PASO set in motion everything that followed. So, after the act signed into law by President Clinton, came the unveiling of the Amber Plan at Dallas City Hall, which had been in planning since the moment National Treasure Diane Simone phoned her local radio show host. Then, on Friday, December 6, 1996, Dallas-Fort Worth-Arlington radio station KRLD unveiled the tone that would go on to be heard preceding child abduction broadcast reports under the Amber Plan, live on the air. The step was an important one. Much like weather emergency alerts, the tone was designed to catch the attention of listeners and eventually provide them with familiarity regarding the preceding alert's importance. The following July, after months of tests and unrealistic hopes they'd never have to use it, the Amber Plan was implemented for the first time when 7-year-old Jonathan Harrison disappeared in North Dallas. The first use of the alert did not necessarily follow the guidelines that were deemed so important upon its unveiling. There were no signs of an abduction, no vehicle description, and Jonathan's last known whereabouts were vague. After the tone, only Jonathan's description and the fact that he was missing followed. Though they would later be criticized for waiting too long as they tried to confirm an abduction, authorities and radio station management ultimately forewent the normal requirements in an attempt to find Jonathan Harrison. Rules be damned might have been the emotional response, but no one in their right mind would argue it was the wrong call. Unfortunately, Jonathan was found deceased in a creek bed after a couple days' searches. The boy was a daredevil, his death the result of drowning after trying to jump the creek with his bicycle and becoming unconscious after crashing. While Jonathan's death was tragic, the implementation of the first Amber Plan alert exceeded expectations. Minutes after police sent it in, radio stations like WBAP-AM aired information about Jonathan every 15 minutes for many hours. The word spread far and wide in Dallas, Fort Worth, Arlington, and the surrounding areas. Though the broadcasts would prove irrelevant, tips came in to the Dallas police, exactly what they'd hoped would happen when an emergency broadcast was issued. In fact, it was only a handful of tipsters who called, most of whom lived near the missing boy. This was a good thing. It showed that agencies wouldn't necessarily be bogged down with false reports and unhinged types trying to insert themselves into an investigation. The only real hitch occurred when a few stations did not receive the facts with the alert information, but other stations quickly supplied it to them, losing no more than a couple minutes. Alerts that followed over the next year or so had their fair share of problems, however, but most had nothing to do with law enforcement or radio station implementation. On Wednesday, July 22, 1997, a 911 operator received a report that three men had barged into a southeast Dallas home a little after 10 a.m. At the scene, in the city's Pleasant Grove neighborhood, an 11-year-old girl told police that her older sister, 13, who had been watching her three siblings, was taken by these mysterious men after they rifled through the apartment and dragged her outside. This prompted the broadcast of the second ever Amber Plan alert, the immediate setup and management of a police command post, a 7-hour search led by the Dallas police that included a search dog team, and even brought in the assistance of the FBI. The 13-year-old was found at about 6:30 p.m., hiding in a field of tall brush. She'd run away from home in reality, she admitted to police. The Amber Plan came under heavy scrutiny as the result of this initiation, specifically, and the use of resources as its result. But Dallas Police spokesperson Chris Gilliam defended its use when he told the Dallas Morning News,
"It helped us find her regardless of the circumstances."
Gilliam pointed out that things might have turned out tragically worse had the 13-year-old girl been left outside to the elements of both the hot Texas summer and the city's relatively high crime rate.
"Activating the Amber Plan worked, and it was the right thing to do."
It's doubtful that anyone with a warm, beating heart would disagree. When the next use of the Amber Plan came, the circumstances were downright bizarre.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of the Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play the Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.
A woman we'll call Linda Martinez left her place of employment, an Arlington, Texas bank, in the early evening of Thursday, August 28, 1996. From there, 21-year-old Linda would later tell police, She picked up her son at the babysitter's house and headed to her mom's to borrow some cash. Linda's mother lived at the corner of Childress Street and Vaughn Boulevard in Fort Worth, and once there, she parked on the road and began walking to the door. As she did, Linda claimed, she looked back to see two men jump in her 1992 Honda Civic, which she left running, with her three-year-old boy, Angelo, still inside. Linda ran toward the vehicle, she said tearfully, pleading with the thieves to take the car, but leave the child. However, they sped off with the boy inside. At 6:15 p.m., Linda called the Fort Worth police from inside her mother's home. The Amber Plan was immediately activated, and descriptions of Angelo and Linda's Honda were broadcast throughout the Dallas-Fort Worth-Arlington metroplex. It was the first time all the originally agreed-upon requirements to implement the plan were present and available, or so authorities originally thought. Police frantically searched for Angelo by cruiser and helicopter. Volunteers, too, sprung into action to help find the car and the boy. But at 9:15 p.m. that night, after Linda left with detectives, her mother drove to the babysitter's house where, lo and behold, little Angelo had been all along. Linda had never picked him up. Her torched 1992 Honda Civic was later found in the garage of an abandoned house on Avenue H. Linda Martinez was later charged with perjuring a police report, a Class A misdemeanor. Many other details concerning why Linda did this are elusive, leaving the entire situation as mysterious as when it first happened. Oddly, perhaps, the next use of the Amber Plan the following November was an honest-to-God carjacking that involved a child in southwest Dallas. That 8-month-old boy was found and rescued by Dallas Police Sergeant Alan Brown, who found the child in the abandoned vehicle wearing a Dallas Cowboys hooded coat, curled up, cute as could be, and warm as toast. Sergeant Brown, a father himself, was elated to report. On Wednesday, January 28, 1998, in Thorpe Spring, Texas, an unincorporated community in Hood County, about 43 miles southwest of Fort Worth, what was considered the county's deadliest day up to then, occurred. Though no one will ever know exactly how the massacre carried out by 51-year-old Donald Wayne Martin played out, the body of his 19-year-old stepson, Christopher Cantwell, was found inside the family's home, and the body of his wife, 38-year-old Patricia Houston Martin, was found in a storage shed on the property. Both had been shot in the back of the head. 2 weeks before, Donald Wayne Martin had gone to a Hood County judge, hoping she would grant him some sort of right to evict one of his stepsons, who he said, to paraphrase, was a lazy freeloader. Judge Judy Watson told Martin she could not legally intervene in the matter. He told the judge,
"I guess we'll just have to deal with it then."
Judge Watson had no way of knowing what Martin meant by that until the horror unfolded. Upon killing his wife and 19-year-old stepson, Hood County Sheriff's deputies believed, Martin waited in the home for his other stepson, 17-year-old Carlos Ortiz, to get home from school, but gave up after the boy hadn't returned for some time. At about 2 a.m., 60 miles west of Thorpe Spring, an Eastland police patrol officer ran the license plate number of a van parked outside City Hall. Eastland was a known spot for travelers to pull off Interstate 20 and catch some rest, since the small town sits just off the highway. Another patrolman pulled up shortly thereafter, and they saw a man inside who they assumed was sleeping. There was no reason to wake the man, the officers figured, so they let him be. It was a fairly typical sight, anyway. Back in Hood County, at sunup, authorities tried to make sense of what had happened there and what the next step should be. Out of the family of five, two had been murdered. One, the killer, was on the loose somewhere and presumed to be alive, and one was known to be alive and out of danger. The fifth, however, 14-year-old Ashley Foster, was nowhere to be found. Inarguably his best course of action at that moment, Sheriff Alan Hardin decided to issue an Amber Plan alert at approximately 7 a.m. on Thursday, January 29, 1998. Exactly 2 hours later, Ashley's body was found. She'd also been shot in the head, her body dumped alongside a remote country road. In between the implementation of the Amber Plan and the discovery of 14-year-old Ashley Foster's body, police in Eastland discovered that the van parked at City Hall there was that of a man wanted for murder in Hood County. As Eastland Police Chief Cecil Funderburg and one of his men approached the vehicle, it appeared as though the man inside was still sleeping. But when they noticed a firearm between his legs, they backed off without waking him. Firefighters broke out the back window of the van. When the driver didn't wake up, police entered and found the man, Donald Wayne Martin, dead from a self-inflicted 9mm gunshot wound to his right temple. Among several other items collected as evidence, the police found a mini cassette recorder in the van. On the tape inside, the 51-year-old man unemotionally detailed why he felt he had to kill nearly his entire family. Like a true narcissist, none of it was Martin's fault in his own eyes. The coward was losing the grip of control. His wife had misled him, he said, about trying to reconcile their marriage. Martin hated her, and likely an extension of that hatred, felt her children were worthless and not living how he thought they should be, he explained matter-of-factly on the tape. Just after killing his family and before driving to Eastland to off himself instead of facing justice, he stopped at the pocket change convenience store and purchased a lottery ticket. The Amber Plan didn't work in this particular case. Ashley Foster was already dead by the time it was issued, and the cops had no real reason to believe, or not believe for that matter, she'd been forced to go with her stepfather in his van. Regardless, the possibility existed, if only briefly, that Ashley might be found alive. Hood County authorities not only made the right call, but they also brought to light another tragic situation in which the alert might help.
This is not going to affect our usage of the Amber Plan,
Fort Worth Police spokesperson Lieutenant Mark Cray said just after a series of mistaken and even hoax reports of kidnappings the year following the Amber Plan's unveiling. However, cops in Fort Worth opted not to implement it when 8-year-old Edna Maria Rodriguez vanished from the city's east side in the middle of the night. The Fort Worth police at first denied this was the case. Police Chief Thomas Windham cited the immediate media coverage as the reason for not issuing the alert, but citizens and radio station management alike were not buying this line, and they chastised the department for its decision. Many thought his choice might be the result of Edna's ethnicity and her family's socioeconomic status. Police were moving too damn slow, League of United Latin American Citizens, District 21 Director Joe Guerrero said, because Edna was a Mexicana. Her body was found at a vacant house near her own home 35 hours after she disappeared. Had the Amber Plan been utilized in Edna's case, it would have been only the sixth time the program was used. Only one of those actually involved an abduction. But nonetheless, they were working. The emergency broadcasts, anyway, were occasionally being referred to as Amber Alerts at this point, leaving out the word plan. And little Edna Rodriguez's case was hardly the last time a department or the program's implementation in general would come under harsh criticism. The first few years had been a particularly rocky beginning for a system that would end up becoming so important and saving the lives of so many children. After several years, it was readily noticeable that Amber Alerts would be used more in family abductions, meaning a non-custodial parent taking off with a child, rather than stranger kidnappings, which are and were far more uncommon. The plan was also spreading at a snail's pace, something that in hindsight seems shocking. The couple dozen law enforcement jurisdictions and the Association of Radio Managers no doubt expected the Amber Plan to gain in popularity fast, but years after its inception, it wasn't even set up in many areas of the state in which it started, Texas. After the turn of the 21st century, the Amber Plan became referred to as the Amber Alert Plan, or simply the Amber Alert. By 2001, 5 years after it was introduced in North Texas, the Amber Alert was being used statewide in only 4 states. The following year, United States Attorney General John Ashcroft appointed Assistant Attorney General Deborah Daniels the first National Amber Alert Coordinator at the request of President George W. Bush, who had been governor of Texas both during the program's creation and the abduction and murder of 9-year-old Amber Hagerman, for whom, of course, it is named. Appointing a coordinator for Amber Alerts worked. At the close of 2004, most states in the U.S. were using them, and following the guidelines and criteria recommended by the Department of Justice. They are, quote, law enforcement must confirm that an abduction has taken place. The child is at risk of serious injury or death. There is sufficient descriptive information of the child, captor, or captor's vehicle to issue an alert. The child must be 17 years old or younger. It is recommended that the child's name and other critical data be entered immediately into the FBI's National Crime Information Center. Information describing the circumstances of the abduction should also be entered and the case flagged as a child abduction. End quote. The Department of Justice also tweaked the plan and made AMBER an acronym. Now, it was not only a tribute to 9-year-old Amber Hagerman, but also stood for America's Missing Broadcast Emergency Response. 2005 was a big year for the program. Hawaii became the last state in the union to complete its statewide plan called the Miley Amber Alert. Miley Gilbert, a 6-year-old girl abducted from her Kailua home and later found murdered in 1985, was added to the plan's name there. A few months later, the Department of Justice came to agreements with the wireless industry, which was gaining momentum fast, of course, and announced that cell phone users could opt into receiving geographically specific Amber Alerts. That initiative and multimedia public service campaigns would last for years and include help from the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, the Ad Council, and the Wireless Foundation. Later in 2005, the department began offering assistance to and training of state and local law enforcement agencies in proper response to abducted and missing children. The response teams were called CART, an acronym for Child Abduction Response Teams. In 2007, an initiative was launched to establish the program on Native American territories, a move that would eventually create what the DOJ refers to as a seamless Amber Alert network. In the following years, the program would set up accounts on social media websites like Facebook and Twitter. The first successful rescue of a child due to the wireless emergency alert system occurred in 2013. While Victoria Orozco showered at her Minneapolis, Minnesota home just before noon on Wednesday, February 20th, 2013, her 8-month-old boy Carlos was napping. He'd fallen asleep in his car seat earlier, and instead of risking waking the boy up, Victoria let him be and took the opportunity to attend to herself. When she got out of the shower, little Carlos was gone. Victoria immediately called police. An Amber Alert was quickly sent out over wireless networks and across social media websites. Victoria had an idea of who might have taken her child, a woman she'd recently become acquainted with named Isabel Diaz Castilla, who she met while at an area laundromat. Diaz Castilla, according to Victoria, became quickly infatuated with her baby Carlos. There was something off about the woman, the frantic mother told the cops. Victoria was able to describe Diaz Castilla's red 2012 Kia Sportage, a description of which was sent out with the Amber Alert. The alert came across the cell phone screen of a local teenaged girl who happened to spot the vehicle at a little before 4 p.m. that day. She quickly phoned her father, who made an anonymous call to 911 immediately. In the first instance of an Amber Alert being sent to cell phones across Minnesota, a child was reunited with his mother. His life possibly saved. Carlos was completely unharmed, and the Amber Alert a complete success. Upon the program's unveiling in 1996, when it was only an agreement between more than 20 North Texas police agencies and 29 local radio stations, Association of Radio Managers President Skip Schmidt said that if the Amber Plan saved just one life, it was worth the effort. As of January 2023, 1,127 children have been recovered thanks to the Amber Alert system, and 131 rescued as the result of the implementation of wireless emergency alerts. It's difficult to imagine the idea coming to fruition, or at least coming into fruition when it did, without the horrific tragedy for which it was named, having unfortunately taken place. The Amber Plan, later the Amber Alert, is the life-saving legacy that 9-year-old Amber Hagerman gave the world when she left. Although the creation and the first use of the program came relatively quickly after her tragic murder, it was a long, hard road for those who loved her and for the residents of Arlington, Texas. We'll continue her story next time on Gone Cold. If you have any information about the abduction and murder of Amber Hagerman, please call the Arlington Police at 817-459-5772. Or to remain anonymous and be eligible for a reward, please call Tarrant County Crime Stoppers at 817-469-8477. If you have not already, look for Gone Cold on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter by searching Gone Cold and looking for the Texas logo. If you'd like to support the show and get the episodes ad-free, go to patreon.com/Gone Cold Podcast. Thanks to all of you who support us there. It's a huge deal to us. If you're not in a position to help Gone Cold financially but would like to in some other way, well, I've got just the thing. Leaving us a 5-star rating and written review on iTunes particularly helps Gone Cold's visibility. The more folks who find us and listen, the greater chance someone with information about a case hears the show and comes forward with what they know. Every little bit helps, and we appreciate y'all's support immensely. however you choose to give it. Sources for this episode can be found in the episode's show notes. Thanks for listening, y'all.